This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
WNYC Studios is supported by the community of writers, presenting live online short courses in the Writers' Annex. Upcoming in 2024, Sylvia Plath, James Joyce's Ulysses, and Emily Dickinson. Instructors include Victoria Chang, Robert Haas, Brenda Hillman, Peter Orner, and Matthew Zapruder. Learn more at communityofwriters.org.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
As summer draws to an end and schools attempt to reopen, it's becoming very clear that pandemic restrictions will extend through the fall and perhaps well into next year. And the prospect of that is daunting for everybody, not least for anyone with kids in the house. After months without summer camps or team sports or scouting trips, the idea of keeping kids indoors seems like more than a parent could bear. But it's happened before, and not that long ago.
I'm Jill Lepore. I'm a professor of history at Harvard. I'm also a staff writer at The New Yorker. And as a historian, I always think a lot about, well, is there comfort to be found in times in the past when people have had harder struggles and gotten through things? And immediately comes to mind for me the stay-at-home campaigns that were run during the polio years.
For all the boys and girls of the Northwest during radio's stay-at-home campaign. Now, listen.
Polio had first hit the U.S. in 1916, and some years were worse than others. A lot of viruses abate in the hotter months. But with polio, the warmer the weather, the virus spread faster, but also polio was most effectively transmitted by water. So in the summer when it got hot, this is before the age of air conditioning, kids would be outside wanting to go to swimming pools, jump in the river. And it's not like they have homeschooling assignments. It's the summer. They're supposed to be outside playing catch and playing baseball and drawing hopscotch with chalk on the sidewalk. And it was really hard to keep them inside. And I came across this incredibly charming clip from WCCO in Minneapolis, which had a Sunday morning program called Fun at Home during the stay-at-home campaign.
Well, it's 9:05 and time for all you kids to gather around your radios and listen to the funnies. This morning we have an extra.
And they would do anything to be entertaining to kids. So this clip is from 1946, and it's the fairly young Democratic mayor, Hubert Humphrey. I mean, think of him maybe as the Andrew Cuomo of the moment, although more charming. He comes in, volunteers to come into the radio station on Sunday to read the funnies out loud.
We start right off with Blondie, and you know what? It looks like Blondie and Dagwood are going to go out on a fishing party. Toby, you got any fishing music over there?
Yeah, a little bit by the sea.
Yeah, that's good. That's fine. Oh, listen to that. Now, just take a look at that. There's Dagwood, kids, and there's Dagwood right along. There's right alongside the lake shore there, and he says, I don't know why it is I can't catch a fish. Doesn't he look, oh, he just looks all down in the dumps, you know.
So, and he loves it. I mean, you can tell because he brings his kids with him. Like, he does voices and he tries to be Dagwood and Blondie. And his kids keep asking questions and they want him to read Popeye instead.
A can of worms there, and look at that funny hat on there, just like he's hunting lions. You see that, Skip? And he says,
I have one of them too.
Oh, you have a hat like that. And then Dagwood says, they pull out fish as fast as they throw.
And when I first listened to this clip, maybe in the fall sometime, I was like, this, it's so adorable and it's so sweet and it's so quaint. But somehow the pathos of it didn't strike me.
Chocolate eclairs for bait. He just uses everything, but he can't catch anything. So there he goes.
One of the strange, maybe only blessings of the COVID pandemic is that kids seem to be so far less vulnerable to it. But with polio, it's exactly the opposite. For a long time, polio was called the baby plague, which is this heartbreaking name, just to think about that. what it does to know that your children, babies, toddlers, preschoolers, are the most vulnerable.
Fishing on private property, huh? Without a license, huh?
Is that a policeman?
Oh, that's a policeman, you betcha. Without a license.
And a long nose.
Oh, you got a long nose, yeah. I wonder who that's a funny looking guy, all right.
Like, it didn't really hit me that this was a desperate measure. It just seemed to me adorable. And I listened to it again. I almost listened to Hubert Humphrey with what I think of as COVID ears. And it's still sweet. It's still charming. I still love listening to it. But it's also quietly desperate.
Mr. Humphrey, we're going to have a song by Toby Prince, the original Sad Sack song. Toby, take over with Put Your Arms Around Me. Cuddle up a little closer, lovey, lovey mine. Cuddle up and be my little...
One of the reasons I study history is I like to see how things began so that I can imagine how bad things end. So there were good polio years and bad polio years, but the worst polio year in the United States was 1952. So a few years after Hubert Humphrey made that recording, reading the funnies, 58,000 Americans got infected. And it was also the year, though, that a young epidemiologist named Jonas Salk developed a vaccine.
A virus that causes polio has been successfully grown inside chicken eggs. This may lead to the development of a potent vaccine to prevent the dreaded disease.
A really promising vaccine, a really controversial vaccine, and it had to be tested. And then he began what became the largest field trial in the history of public health.
Even so, it was the largest such medical test ever attempted.
And finally, on this momentous day, April 12th, 1955, the beginning of spring.
Heading the medical men was Dr. Jonas Salk.
Summer's coming. It's going to be another hard polio year. People expected it to be a very hard polio year. The clock is ticking. The calendar is turning. Everybody wants that polio vaccine before the summer of 1955. And there's this quite incredible announcement it's made at the University of Michigan. Hundreds of reporters go there, and they printed out these press reports with all the details of the results of the field trial that they're going to announce.
Reporters pressed forward to get the results the whole world was waiting for. Rushed to their typewriters.
And the reporters are literally climbing over each other, trying to get to the copies of the press release. Like, so eager. I mean, you can imagine that now. It doesn't take a whole lot of imagining to imagine that now. If someone had a vaccine and we'd waited 18 months to know if it worked. And it works.
An historic victory over a dread disease is dramatically unfolded at the University of Michigan. Here, scientists usher in a new medical age with the monumental report.
I mean, just, you picture sort of a medieval turreted castle and the trumpeters blowing their horns and the flags are, you know, the standards are being unfurled and... Like, there's just this, like, the vaccine works! And, you know, this kind of... And it's the relief, the joy, the exaltation, the exhilaration, the knowledge that this thing could end.
90% effective, and modest Dr. Salk answers newsmen's questions.
The great wealth of events that is accumulated in the experiences of so many is well represented in the report made this morning.
We often notice that people from different generations have these different timestamps in their early memories. Like, there are people whose first memory is of 1969 and watching the Apollo moon landing, or whose first memory is of 1963 and the assassination of John F. Kennedy. I remember for years when I would ask students what their first memory was of an event of global significance, it was 9/11. I grew up with the vaccine, but people not very much older than I am suffered from polio, watched polio, knew people who suffered from polio. But my kids don't know anyone has had polio. I don't think they know how it works or how terrifying it was. And that's the great blessing of a vaccination program, right? Like, we forget how bad the disease was. But there's a generation of Americans whose most significant early memory is of waiting in line to get the Salk vaccine. I have a colleague who I once asked about this, and he said, I can remember the taste of it in my mouth. It was like a sugar drop. It was almost like a lollipop. And my mother said, this will save your life. you will have a life. And I think about that, and I think about the generation of kids who we can only hope will remember the day that they go to get the coronavirus vaccine. And it will be their timestamp.
Staff writer and professor of history, Jill Lepore. Jill's just written about the science of spending most of your life indoors, and you can find it at newyorker.com.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.